Black radio voices alive and thriving.
Next up, we have the article that we mentioned on Black British Pirate Radio titled Sound of the Underground, How Black Britain Changed the Face of UK Radio. It's written by Toby Cheramatang and basically explores the history of Black pirate.
Murdered and missing indigenous women and girls. Amalo, Nick Hansen, Ukale Makatihalanga Mayugut, Dana Nick Hansen, Teravesako, Takutoso, Eskimo Ninja Nirasuk, Amalo, Nijotinitusakataranga Megata, Nara Twinarache. Hi, my name is Annie Pisuti. Today is February 16, 2021. And welcome to Nipibut. On today's show, we will be speaking about mental wellness and self-care. Dina Pisipti speaks with Dana Danger about missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And we have an interview with Nick Hansen. Nick Hansen, a.k.a. the Eskimo Ninja. We will also listen to some Inuktitut music, so keep on listening.
Tina Pisukti here with Nipivut. This weekend, February 14th, we commemorated in Canada missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. I'm here with Dana Danger, who works with organizing the vigil that we have here in Montreal. Dana, can you tell us where you're from and tell us a bit about the work that you do?
Absolutely. Ani, Dana Danger, Indigenous Cause, Mi'kwa and Dordem, Métis, Soto, Polish, and Da, so-called Winnipeg, Manitoba, Ninjaba. Hi, everyone. My name is Dina Danger. I'm Métis, Soto, Polish from Treaty 1 Territory, or so-called Winnipeg, Manitoba. I've been living here in Georgia now for over 8 years, and a couple of the roles that I have in my life are visual artist, but I'm also the campaign lead for Missing Justice, which is a solidarity campaign for the vigil, for the murdered and missing Indigenous women, girls, trans, and two-spirit relatives. And that is kind of hosted through the Center for Gender Advocacy, which is kind of like a student fee levy funded group that kind of exists at Concordia University.
Why is it important that people remember missing and murdered Indigenous women? Why do we continue to hold vigils and to keep this alive in people's memories?
I think that the vigil in particular, we have to look at, you know, especially with the words missing and murdered, it really brings up a lot of, you know, feelings when you hear that. And for myself, being an organizer and like why I see this as being important is that, you know, we often hear other stories about our people in the news and like these kind of the stories that are around our women when they go missing and murdered are quite brutal and don't really kind of memorialize or think about who the people were as individuals, you know? We don't hear a lot of that. So I feel like these vigils give family members, loved ones, community members that space to mourn, to remember, to share good memories and stories of their loved ones, especially because a lot of these women, girls, trans, two-spirit people, when they go missing, there's no answers. I think just because of the upsetting nature of it, that somebody is murdered in such a violent way, and then there is literally no answers. There is nobody that is charged. Usually, often, a lot of our deaths are ruled as suicide rather than further looking into, you know, what this national crisis really means for our people. And it's just the ways in which they're reported on, you know, when you're listening to the news or you're reading these headlines, you know, you're hearing about alcohol and systems and all that, and you're not really hearing, you know, the stories about those individuals. It's just like maybe what in that moment led them to go missing, to be murdered. But we need to think way more critically of that. And I think that the vigil really gives us that space and time to process what has been happening to our community for years and years now. You know, I think about how this vigil on February 14th is, you know, this is like its 30th year. We think about 1991 was the year in like Vancouver's downtown east side that a Coast Salish woman went missing, and there was little to no media or any sort of word about this disappearance. And I feel like the community was frustrated that there was little to no answers about what was happening to our people on the street, but our people in the community. It kind of doesn't matter what class bracket you're in, the intersections that you're in, anybody that is Indigenous, Inuit, or Métis can be a target of this violence. So I feel like that's why it's super important to gather and to be able to grieve that, especially with no answers often.
Dana, with COVID hanging over everyone and energies being low, I imagine this year's vigil was more difficult than other years. And how do you stay well? How do you maintain your mental health when dealing with something so difficult? What are some ways you can share with our listeners that they can continue practices to maintain their self-care?
Absolutely. You know, every year it can bring up a lot of feelings. It can be quite triggering, even for those that are organizing, you know, because we are dealing with such sensitive, very close to the heart topics. And for myself, you know, being, you know, in a major position where I'm listening to a lot of and witnessing a lot of stories and seeing this stuff firsthand, you know, the ways in which I keep myself held, I kind of go back to my teachings, or like with anyone, I would encourage them to like really think about those teachings or practices that your elders have shared with you, that your family has shared with you. One that I really like to do is, because I'm in the urban city, you know, I don't have the same sort of access to medicine. So I like to urban forage. So I'll kind of go around in my neighborhood and, you know, talk to see the plants. Like I'll see a cedar tree and I'll talk to it and give it some tobacco and take a couple clippings and then go home and not do a real like cedar tea, but I'll do like I'll just boil some cedar water on the stove just to purify my house. You know, maybe I'll put a towel over my head and breathe that in, just to remember the properties and all the teachings that our ancestors and our living relatives have passed on to us of how to take care of ourselves. The other one that's really important is kind of going offline a bit, like turning off your phone, turning off your computer, you know, really not getting caught up in the distractions of that, because it's endless, you know, online. And we need to remember to, in order to regulate our nervous systems, that we need to have calm also in our lives. One that I really like to do too is like kind of like scented hand oils, like lavender or, you know, the sweetgrass hand lotion from Sequoia. I love that one because I can just put that lotion in my hands and rub it in and kind of cup my hands around my face and just breathe it in. And it's a good grounding technique too, you know, of just like smelling something, feeling something, you know, really calling to those medicines and those elements to kind of help us through with our emotions, you know. So those are some of the self-care strategies that I do.
The vigil is kind of like a ritual done every single year, and it's done on a community level. Are there any personal rituals that you do?
Absolutely. As if with everyone, everybody kind of has their own different ways of respecting, you know, their ancestors who have passed on. I really, you know, try to keep with the ritual that I learned actually from Blue Waters, who was one of the elders that was at the vigil, talked about how we, when we wake up in the morning and we greet the sun, or maybe we get up at 1 p.m. in the afternoon and we greet the sun when we're ready, you know, it doesn't matter when. But that first, I've been trying this a lot more too. So waking up and just taking that time to be grateful that you were able to wake up another day, and then just think about all those, you know, we think about ourselves, and then you go through that circle of, like, you know, sending love to my partner, and then I'll send love to my parents, and I'll send love to my sister, and I'll send love to my grandparents, and then I'll send love, you know, to my friends, my close kin. And then, you know, especially on a day like the vigil, I will sit down and I'll think about everybody that helped organize it, everybody that was able to show up, all the family members that gave their testimonies, that spoke their truth. I'll think about them, you know, and how hard that can be to have to do that over and over, and to know this ritual is not really for the public, but it's for us, you know, it's for our communities to just create a space that just is trying to outweigh all of the negativity through, you know, journalism and all those sort of things where, you know, we sometimes feel out of control of our truth and our voices. Mm-hmm. And just like to really pour that love in there. And I mean, it kind of sounds like silly, but it's nice when you can, it can be like that. But for me, it's really important to show that gratitude and to be humble for like what we have and all those sort of things. So that's like one strategy that I really am like really enjoying right now, because it really reminds me, oh man, I actually have all these amazing people around me, you know? And even if they're not a direct support in my life, it, you know, just being able to acknowledge them and to see their humanity and be like, I hope that you have a good day. I hope that I have a good day, and I hope that you also have a good day, and that I'm sending you love and I'm thinking about you, you know, just thinking about those, our community, thinking about our family members, whoever really needs it right now too, you know. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, I know my friend's going through cancer right now and having a difficult time, and I'm going to send my prayers out to her and her family, you know, that type of thing. Something that's tangible, you know, that's what I do.
There's always a lot of interest from non-Indigenous allies wanting to help out and make a difference. Can you tell us what you suggest for allies? How can they be helpful to the cause without overstepping boundaries or causing harm?
Absolutely. It's always a very delicate balance, I find, with, you know, especially because with Missing Justice, you know, my mandate, or like at least with the organize, like at least how I organize, is that with this specific, you know, with Missing Justice is solidarity, which means there is a lot of non-Indigenous peoples that come there and give their support. And I notice more and more as people become aware of like what our communities are going through, people are very quick to action, you know, like this is a travesty, like we need to help. But we must remember that our communities have been going through this for much longer than maybe some of the people that are coming to realize this have been alive. And so it's always good for us to not overstep that line of like when we're thinking about how can I help, rather than, you know, thinking about asking Indigenous peoples to tell you how to do that, you know, maybe sit with that feeling first of like, why do you think that it's important to like want to help? And then what is the reciprocity that you're going to bring to that relationship, you know? Because if you have to do a lot of learning, you're going to really be taking that off of the backs of other people when you arrive. So maybe it's, you know, for settlers, I would say read as much knowledge as you can, so that when you come, you know, to Indigenous peoples, that they're not having to explain their whole existence and, you know, their ways of knowing and being, that you have some awareness already about that. And then also that you know, it's good to kind of like use your ears more in these situations, especially in the beginning, to listen as much as possible to like what needs to be done, and not really what you can offer, but what the community is asking of you. So when my volunteers, you know, when people want to come volunteer with Missing Justice, you know, I send them articles and I ask them those questions of like, who are you? Like, who are your ancestors? All that sort of work is super important to do. but then tangible things that can be done. You know, it's very exhausting for Indigenous peoples to have to constantly fight with government, government officials, all that bureaucracy can really, is really hard for us, because it's not, it's sometimes it's not always our, these are not our knowledge systems. This isn't how we would be in community. So, you know, writing to local representatives, you know, these people that, you know, when you participate in the voting system, these are the people that you've elected as your officials. So let your officials know what's going on. Let them know that this is a really, you know, that enough is enough. This national crisis has gone on too long and we're losing too many people, and that there's tons of different things that you can advocate for. I mean, there, we've been waiting for an Indigenous health center here for over 10 years. We've been waiting for a lot of these things. But really, it's the general public that we really want to remember that we've been doing this work for a long time. And, the, you know, it doesn't take much effort on their part to just kind of show up and write letters to government officials, be it like local, municipal, provincial, federal, you know, like you are the constituents, you are, you know, you have that power and your voice, so use it wisely, because a lot of us are very tired of screaming about this already, and we could use some amplification in that voice if the governments knew what local citizens felt about this. That I would see a major change than just Indigenous peoples, you know, kind of, you know, that's the ways in which people can use their voice and their power and their place in society, you know, to kind of release that burden from us who are always doing that work. Yeah, that's how, those are some of the things that I would see. So what I would suggest, if, especially because Missing Justice has like, has been doing this for quite a few years now, I would say go to the missingjustice.ca webpage. We have a page that kind of like shows the past vigils, but also missingjustice@genderadvocacy.ca is a great way to get in touch with us. That's how all of our, you know, volunteers contact us. If you want to know more information, if you want to show up to a meeting and like learn, because we're already starting to plan for the October 4th vigil coming up. You know, it takes a lot of time, especially now with it being online. We really have to start doing these things much earlier. So if people would like to get involved, whether you're Indigenous or non-Indigenous, reach out to us at Missing Justice. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love your participation.
Is there anything else that you want to add before we finish?
I just want to say, like, you know, happy Valentine's Day out there, post-Valentine's Day out there to all of the Indigenous baddies, the ones that are working really hard out there, to our frontline workers who are doing so many amazing things, and really helping our community right now. It's not, it's really not safe out there on these streets right now with COVID. So I just really want to share so much. I just want to send out love to all those folks that don't, maybe don't even have a radio to like listen to, you know, and just to know that there's somebody out there in the universe that's thinking of them. And I, you know, I really am praying for their safety in this time.
Thank you so much, Dana, for taking time to speak with us today.
Kitchimigwich.
If you were triggered by what you just heard and need to talk to someone, here are toll-free 24/7 numbers to call to speak to a counselor in Inuktitut. MMIWG 1-844-413-6649. I'll repeat that, 1-844-413-6649 or for wellness at 1-855-242-3310. 1-855-242-3310.
To commemorate missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, we'll be playing Twin Flames Porch Light next.
I leave the porch light on just in case. Open that door, swings, and I see your face. And I, how will I even run?
And I keep your photograph to this day, wishing and hoping that you're okay. And I, I'm missing you now.
Un erreur m'a pétard en l'air avec Kitsarong a dilitao la rave. Zernarong a anetao kone rave. Darong a
was the same. Love remains. All this hurts inside me. Call your name to this day. Wish you were home beside me.
Left your bedroom in its place. Posters and memories unerased. And I, how will I even
lie? Standing in the doorway, I hold back my tears. Seems just like yesterday, although it's been years. And I, I'm missing you now.
I'm never gonna be down, I rave. Kids are gonna tell it all, I rave. Zona gonna an it all, cone rave. Dahavuna
was the same. Love remains. All this hurt inside me. Call your name to this day. Wish you were home beside me.
Light on just in case. Open that door, swings, and I see your face. And I, how will I even run? I leave the porch light on just in case. Open that door, swings, and I see your face. And I,
wearing a mask shows your community that you love and care.
Tusasi miavo joy naoyok pihatik.
Ulumi ומבין ויבו לך סימן ניתי דבדו ולומי פרחתי גיגן הלילגי
with Nipi Voot. I'm here on a Zoom call with Nick. Can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are and where you're from?
Yeah, uvanga Nick Ilrujak Hansen Nupia Gurunga Unalachlimen Ut Kiavig Minlu Alaska me, Apaga Charlie Hobson, Si Akaga Adeline Katungan Hobson, Melga Ibn Hobson Senior, Savakbunga Rook Alaska me. Apaga Brett Hansen Danik, Akama Davida Hobson Hansen, Bir Bariga Anupia Rulini Belarusinga, Asi Anayukangi Europe Muguruk. In my language, I'm Inupiaq. My Inupiaq name is Ilrujak. I'm from Unalakleet and from Barrow, Alaska. And I'm known as the Eskimo Ninja from American Ninja Warrior. My grandparents are Charlie and Adeline Hobson from Barrow. My great grandfather is Eben Hobson Sr. He's the founder of the Alaska Federation of Natives, one of the largest native gatherings in Alaska that gathers all our chiefs together. My parents are Brett and Davida Hobson Hansen. My dad is Hansen from Edmonton and from Vancouver and from Los Angeles. So I'm mixed European on my dad's side, and I'm Inupiaq on my mom's side, and she's originally Hobson from and Katungan from Unalakleet, Alaska, and a small village of 750 people on the west coast. And Barrow's kind of a little bit bigger town, about 3,000 people, 4,000 people now. And that's where I'm from. And I'm Inupiaq Eskimo or Inuit. And I started on the show American Ninja Warrior about 7 seasons ago to compete. And here I am hanging out with you guys.
Thank you so much for taking your time to speak with us today, Nick. It's a great pleasure to have you. I saw you on Ninja Warrior, and I thought to myself, am I dreaming? Someone pinched me. There's an Eskimo Ninja Warrior. It was a great surprise and just wonderful to see Inuit representation and you know, to see this on TV, and I'm sure you must get messages all the time of how incredibly inspiring this is to be able to represent your community like this. Do you get a lot of positive feedback from your community?
Yeah, I mean, it started out kind of slow, you know. It was different because nobody expected anything like that to happen, especially myself. You know, I mean, I'm just a kid from a village in my mind, so being able to go and compete on a national television show and represent my culture and represent who we are, that was a big step for me in my life. And it was really cool. But yeah, it started coming out like after my first year, it was just like a Facebook message here and an invitation to a school there. And now it's become a full-time career. I mean, people are coming out and inviting me to all these different things across the country. And it's just been this crazy journey that I didn't expect to happen. And I'm just going to ride this wave until the wave hits the beach.
That's wonderful. Do you still compete in Inuit Games? And is this still part of your training regimen to include Inuit Games?
Yeah, 100%. So I'm on Team Alaska for the Arctic Winter Games. So the adult team. So we get four guys from Alaska to represent our team. And so I compete against all the top athletes in the world. Andrew Bell coming from Nunavut. Some of the top athletes from Greenland, like Tony Fisker. And there's a bunch of us that go out and compete against each other and in the Arctic sports. We were supposed to be doing it, but it got canceled because of COVID. So I still just kind of stay in shape because we don't know when they're going to reschedule for the next Arctic Winter Games. I think they just postponed this one or canceled it completely, and they're just going to move on to the next one in 2 years. So I think 2022 is the next Arctic Winter Games. So I got to stay in shape, and hopefully my age doesn't start to catch up with me. but I still compete 100%. The World Eskimo Indian Olympics, we hold it every summer in Fairbanks, Alaska. And hopefully COVID will allow that to happen again. And we've gotten competitors coming from Alberta, from Whitehorse, from Greenland that flew all the way over here just to compete in our games, to give it a try and see what Alaskan games we play. And we've done the same at the Circumpolar North Conference. You know, they always host some games there. So we've gone and competed against some of the best top Canadian athletes as well, and Inuit athletes from your regions. So it's been a lot of fun to be able to compete and to share our culture and to, to grow as a much larger community than people think.
Yeah, that's absolutely wonderful. And I know you guys have some fantastic athletes out in Alaska. We're always trying to beat you. You mentioned earlier being mixed and that you were heavily bullied when you were younger. And clearly you're a huge representative of Eskimo and Inupiat and doing a lot for your community. I guess I'm wondering, what was it that inside of you, what is it that you think, is it the sports that brought out that confidence? Was there anything else that was at play? Anyone who helped you to get through that? Because it is a huge hump to overcome, having these feelings of not fitting in and being bullied and told that you can't be included, that you're not really Eskimo. So is it the games that made you feel included? Were there other things that helped you through this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I kind of found a desire kind of within myself, you know. I mean, I was kind of forced into a corner, right? Like the bullies were beating me up and forcing me to kind of make a decision. And I had to decide, am I going to just allow this to continue? And am I going to just accept the fact that they're telling me who I am? Or am I going to know who I am and show them myself, right? Like, am I going to know who I am and understand it and then show them like, hey, look, prove it to you, you know? And fighting back for me, the controversy, like physical fighting is not my style. I'm just not the type to kind of like try to throw a punch back. So I never did. I never fought. I've never physically gotten into altercations with people. And anytime that kind of arises, I just kind of put myself in a situation mentally where I'm prepared to accept what happens and try to reason with somebody. And I've always been a reasonable person, and I've always been able to break up fights that I've been in a situation where scuffles are about to go down. I've always kind of been the mediator and said, hey, calm down, let's do this. And it's always been able to work, at least this far in my life. So hopefully it continues. So that's kind of what I decided to do when I was a kid. I mean, I was literally in like third grade and I was like, you know what? I'm going to show these kids that I am Native and I am white. And I'm going to be accepting of both of those. And I'm going to understand that. And I'm going to show them that I'm capable. And, you know, over the years, they just started to accept me and started to understand, like, wow, you know, he is actually who he says he is, because he knows it. It's, look at that. It's proven. And I think that understanding who I am and true, you know, there's, once I understood the foundation of who I was, I'm Inupiaq, and I know that and I understand that, but I'm also Italian and I understand that and I know that. And I'm also a little bit of Scottish and I understand that and I know that. And as soon as I understood all those things, I wanted to know more. I wanted to grow in that. And I wanted to share that with others. And maybe those kids were confused too. You know, I started to understand, like, well, maybe he's half too, and he doesn't even know it. Or maybe he's part Athabascan and he doesn't even know he's part Athabascan, which is why he's so stubborn. I'm just kidding. My fiance's Athabascan. That's for her. So, you know, maybe they're half and half too, and they don't understand exactly what part of their culture is. You know, they understand who they are. And so that's kind of what I wanted to show them is, hey, I know who I am. And because I know who I am, there's nothing that you can do that's going to affect me. There's nothing that you can do that's going to offend me. And there's nothing that you can push. You can't push me off this foundation that I have, because no matter what you say, I know who I am. And that's what matters most. And so I just kind of stood on that foundation. And it's gotten me to the point to where I'm at today, where I'm now an ambassador for my culture. I mean, I'm literally a bridge between Western culture and Alaska Native culture. You know, I'm physically, literally, this hand is brown and this hand is white, and I am that person, you know? So I just kind of took it upon myself to continue to send that message and share that message throughout my life.
Thank you.
tong ni atong gluni taktik ti simabu nunakating ni nagligusum ng midlo ipigusum ng midlo. Wearing a mask is a way to show your community love and care.
Ilangan ni hongan ni hongan ni tuin naungin lang. Ilangan ni sapo mitro tiyo sa ngubo kaksong na tukko tunon. Ilangit ka na tamit o nataktisayt o walo ni polisit isumakot ilusak susayangin ng mot at tutamakon na suot. Aksong na tumiligovit ilatin nulunit ikayok tawit sa hapo. O haliyak logit haritaw ya goodveterans.gc.ca/mentalhealth. O halaw ti kulunit 1-866-522-2122. Kanatob ka ba mga tatusaktisilti nga.
What's up, you guys? It's Nick Hansen, the Eskimo Ninja from Unalaklik, Alaska, and you're listening to Nipivut CKUT 90.3 FM.
Tim and the band, Ingisimiyut, Ingilakponga, Tusulirama.
Well, we're still on the topic of identity. I want to speak to you about Eskimo. You go by Eskimo Ninja. Over here in Canada, we use Inuit because we went through a whole process of naming ourselves because at the time, our leaders were saying that that was a Cree word. to be eater of raw meat. And so we decided to use Inuit, which was calling ourselves the people, and this is the name we took on. How does it work in Alaska? You guys are still using Eskimo. Is this the general term? Because you also use Inupiat. I'm really interested to know how you became Eskimo Ninja.
Yeah, my cousins actually called me the Eskimo Ninja the first time. And I was like, okay, I mean, if you guys want to call me that, go for it. I didn't really have a name, you know, I wasn't really trying to come up with anything. Like, I was just going to be Nick Hansen on the show. That was my thought, you know, but then somebody on production, I don't know how it happened, but somebody on set at American Ninja Warrior got a hold of it. And then, so they sent me and they got an interview and then they asked me, so we heard you call yourself the Eskimo Ninja. And I was like, oh, yeah, I mean, my cousins call me that. So if that's the name that they're going to want to use, I mean, that's fine with me. So, you know, to be honest, in Alaska, we are indifferent about it. You know, I mean, at least I am personally, like I am personally indifferent, me and my family. My grandfather is the president of the Whaling Commission. So he's got a whaling crew up in Barrow. His name is Charlie Hobson. And he's a full Inupiat speaker, full-blooded Inupiat, you know, and he's like all the way, you know, one of the top leaders in our community up in Barrow. And when the show comes on, he literally answers the phone, Eskimo Ninja's grandpa, you know, like when he answers the phone, that's how he answers the phone. So if, you know, the way that I look at it is, it's to each their own. You know, if you're offended by the term Eskimo, then I'm not going to use that around you, right? Like if I was in Canada and I was, you know, hanging out with like Andrew Bell and Inuvut or something, I would use the term Inuit because I know that as out of respect for your guys's culture and for what you guys have done, which has taken a lot of work to identify yourselves as Inuit, like I'm going to use Inuit and 100%. And in Greenland, same thing. I'm going to use Inuit and I'm going to use, or whatever they want to, you know, call themselves as the native people of Greenland. So, and when we're in Barrow, we're Inupiat. We're not Eskimo all the time. We're Inupiat, especially if you know that someone else is Inupiat. You can almost tell by the shape of their eyes, you know what I mean? And for a Yupik, I'm going to call them Yupik. And for Athabaskan, I'm going to call them Athabaskan. And Tlingit, Haida, Unagin, whatever they are, as a person, I'm going to respect that of their culture. But when somebody calls me Eskimo, it's, you know, I don't take offense to it. I don't, you know, and when I use the term Eskimo Ninja, it's just a general term that, and there were so many different like dialects that translated it differently. So like one dialect I heard was someone who makes snowshoes is an Eskimo. And I was like, okay, I don't even know how to make snowshoes, so I can't really call myself Eskimo, but if that's what you want to recognize me as, someone that does make snowshoes, I'll take it. If my grandfather definitely made snowshoes, so I would call him an Eskimo. And then there is the eaters of raw meat. And so like when I broke it down into myself, like people ask me this on the show, they're like, oh, look at this white guy using Eskimo to make money. And I'm like, first of all, I don't make any money. I have to pay to go to American Ninja Warrior. It costs me $3,000 a year just to compete on that show. Unless I win, then I don't make anything. Like, we don't get paid anything for American Ninja Warrior unless we do well or unless we win one of the prizes. So like, I'm not getting paid for this. I'm just using it as a vehicle to start bringing awareness and attention to our culture and try to be an ambassador for, you know, Inupiat or Inuit or Eskimo people, you know, and in Alaska, we're just more lax, I guess, more lackadaisy about it. It's not really a big deal. If you want to call us Inuit, do it. If you want to call us Eskimo. We know who we are and we'll just, you know, correct you on the spot and say, yeah, I'm Eskimo, but I'm Inupiat Eskimo. So I'm not a Yupik or I'm Inupiat from people from the North, you know? So we just kind of, you know, correct it as it goes. And eventually the times will come when things start to, you know, it just becomes, you know, hopefully one of these days people just will stop being offended by things so easily in different aspects of different people's lives. And you know, as an Eskimo or as an Inupiat or as an Inuit person, I got thick skin. So I'm not worried about it either way, left or right.
You were always a leader and always very active in your community, working with young people. And it sounds like having very strong, influential men in your family. And you mentioned some of the more difficult things that we see in a lot of Inuit communities.
So yeah, you know, one of the biggest struggles that I think happens in rural communities and Inuit communities, especially ours, you know, in Inupiaq culture, and our young men seem to have lost their identity. I feel like, you know, as our purpose has changed so much that it's not what our people are used to. You know, culturally, it was the man's job to go out, get out on the ice, bring their kayak with them, go hunt, bring a seal home, bring an ugruk home, bring a walrus home, whatever it might be, or go out and get out whaling and be out whaling for weeks or a month at a time, and then come back and feed the community. And that was our purpose as Alaska Native people, or as Native people in general. That was what we did. And now with Western culture coming into play, and you know, AC is right down the street. You just go buy something from the store, and women are becoming more powerful in who they are and understanding their roles, and that they're just as capable and just as the positive things that are happening in women's. But it's also the men are starting to lose their identity. They're starting to lose what they felt is, you know, or have been for so many years. They've been the, you know, the strong rock, and now women are the strong rock also. So it's like a strong rock meets a strong rock. And so for men to be able to accept that role or accept something smaller, especially our Native men, because it's just something that hasn't happened for so long, because like I said, Native people were the last to know. So we just aren't accustomed to that growth or accustomed to that acceptance. Mm. We want our purpose to stay our purpose. You know, elders are, they're like, yeah, call yourselves whatever you want. We're Eskimo, you know, like if that's what the elders are saying, that's because they know who they are and they know their purpose. But as it grows into Western culture more and more, we have cell phones, we have, you know, guns, we have motorboats, all the different things that, you know, we're not out making our kayaks or making our umaks, you know, we're not out getting our harpoons sharpened and sharpening our pointy tips for our arrowheads or whatever it might be. We're not getting our hands on stuff all the time. It's a lot more easily to just scroll through something. So we lose track of going on in our communities for mental wellness in young, especially in young men. And so finding that purpose and finding that role that you play in your community, it's so valuable that, mm-hmm. you know, understanding that role and accepting that role is something that I want to, you know, share with young men across wherever I can get to. If I could come and visit you guys, I'd be down for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, getting that message across that, hey, look, I didn't know what I was going to be. I thought I was going to be a civil engineer. I was going to college. College sucked. I failed college. I moved home. I became a teacher. And after I became a teacher, I found my calling, and that was to guide young men and guide young women to understand who they are and know that, and motivate them to show them that they have options, and there's options out there, and you can even do something that is culturally connected, you know? And so I found that through Eskimo dancing and through, you know, doing the Native Games and being a Native Games coach, my role became lead them and guide them to understand who they are and guide them to understand their culture, and that you don't have to do what everyone told you to do, because civil engineering was what everyone told me to do and I was good at it, but that's not what I love to do and what I was passionate about. What I'm passionate about is teaching young people and watching them grow and helping guide them into who they are. And so that's what I decided to follow, and here I am, you know, on a national television show, and my job now is a motivational speaker. I travel across the sand. I'd be willing to go as far as it took to showcase to young people, young Native men and women, that, you know, they have a purpose, and their purpose is what they are passionate about, and they can follow a pipe dream, and eventually it's going to be amazing. Like, I never thought that this is who I would be. I never thought that this is where I was going to go, but it became an option, and I took advantage of it. And now I'm, you know, guys that are Native and, you know, working on our mental health together. So it's just crazy where this path has led. And it's just a matter of, you know, accepting that role and understanding it and finding your purpose or reinventing it.
Nick, where can people go to follow you? Where can they go to get more information and just be able to follow you, whether it's through the motivational speeches, through the series of talks you do on Ninja Warrior? Where can people go to follow you and see what you're up to next?
Yeah, I mean, you can go to pretty much any social media. I'm on every social media possible. You talk about Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, and it's all Eskimo Ninja. You can just search Eskimo Ninja and find me anywhere. And I'm down to hang, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not just down to like get on social media and post. I'll reply to the comments. If you post something in the comments, man, I'll hit you up. You know what I mean? Like, you know, expect a reply at some point or another, or something in the DMs if you're trying to hit me up for anything like that. Find me on Facebook at the Eskimo Ninja. So just anything with the, you know, at symbol Eskimo Ninja, you can follow me and just kind of keep up with me in my life. I'm an open book, man. I mean, like, I'm willing to share anything possible. I'm always posting about the games or posting about Ninja Warrior or just posting about going out riding, going out hunting. You know what I mean? Like, that's what my social media is all about. So if you want to go and hit me up on any of those mediums, then don't hesitate to. And don't hesitate to watch American Ninja Warrior if you can. If it's something that you want to stream on Hulu or if it's something that you want to watch on regular TV. I'm not sure what stations y'all get in Canada or in the, you know, in all the different villages up there in the Inuit Arctic. But, you know, you can find it on Hulu or on YouTube, and you can Google me and you'll find something worth watching, maybe. Or if not, then cool too. You don't have to follow me.
Most definitely worth watching. Nick, I'm going to thank you for taking the time to speak with us today. It was absolutely wonderful to have a discussion with you.
No problem.
Jennifer May, Dina Pisuti, Carl Bauer, Amalu Nancy Angela. Nakomiro Mayunga Concordia University, Southern Quebec Inuit Association, Amasi KUT 90.3 FM. Pinaso Sula to me, Tutnala Larabusi Urban Indigenous Radio Mic, Amalu Pinaso Simakuna Mipati March to Mulakan, Utilang Mayugut. Mana to Saksaulang Alam Madrid, Soul Perspective. Thank you for listening to Nipibut. Our theme song is by Angela Amarolik. This episode was made by me, Annie Pisuti, Jennifer May, Tina Pisuti, Carl Bauer, and Nancy Angela. Thanks to Concordia University, Southern Quebec Inuit Association, and CKUT 90.3 FM. Tune in this time next week for Urban Indigenous Radio, and we will be back March 2nd. Stay tuned for Soul Perspective up next.
Your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends are prohibited, and travel between regions should be avoided. In red zones, it's also forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the specific measures addressing the situation. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
The following is a previously broadcast program.